All right, so I'm Dina Schattenkirk, and I'm the founder of Talk Popsy. Thank you very much for coming into the tent. Please introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Joshua Smithline. I'm a BFA acting student.
Oh, cool.
And just saw the tent and was quite interested.
Great. Well, you know, what we're doing here, this particular sort of exhibition and topic that we've sort of revisited is on censorship because of all of the problems over the country in the last 6 months about speech issues, right?
Of course.
So, you know, you're an actor.
Yeah.
You are involved in speech.
I deal a lot with speech, actually. Yeah, quite intimately.
Yeah, so tell me what you think the value of the arts are for free speech.
Oh, well, they're sort of the foundation. They're like the method that we have to talk to the people and get our feelings out now.
Yeah.
Like they're the reason that we...
Now I know you're a weak one.
Well, I feel like as humans, we're meant to express. It's a part of our psyche. It's like expression. That's what it's part of, like, what we can do. And the arts, you know, think we need to talk about things that are pertinent. Like there's this brand of theater that I was just in a workshop actually where we were talking about devising works based on issues that are going on. So there was specifically with CUNY, there was like unions that were, they were talking about teachers union and I forget what they're even called, but teachers that don't have tenure. So they would be adjunct professors. They don't have, and they're not getting benefits and they're not getting paid enough and they're essentially working for less than what their work is worth. And so we were devising works based on those issues.
Oh, that's cool.
Things
that's
like
cool.
That. So, yeah.
Can you talk, so you're so more interested in theater than in movies?
Yes.
Okay. So can you talk about, like, I've been thinking, right?
Sorry, we can bring it back to censorship.
Yeah, we can. I was.
Sort of a big question.
So we had a couple lawyers here on Friday talking about the kind of speech that people do, and they made the comment that we're evolutionarily geared to understand one another in person. So plays are in person, right, in ways that sort of movies aren't. So, and that we can express things to one another in person and say things, even though they're not like linguistically formed. They were talking about the ways that we are allowed to empathize with one another when we communicate in person. So can you kind of take that and put that into the play world and into the censorship world?
Yeah. Well, specifically, I think plays are live. That's their draw. The words, I would say, should mostly stay the same. And I think,
sorry, that's
no
my
problem.
Fault.
It happens. Phones these days, right?
Yeah, really.
No, but what's interesting is that they're live and you see the people there and they're in the same space. So I think what makes it different is you're seeing that person go through whatever processes it may be. There's a work right now at Theater for a New Audience, Public Obscenities, which is about somebody coming back from America and they're going back to their hometown of Calcutta and bringing their black gay boyfriend and sort of seeing how that sort of
cultural.
Older, yeah, cultural, different yeah. cultural differences sort of interact with maybe a sort of different system of thinking in Calcutta. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm going to, and I'm excited because part of the people that I was working with in the advising group are part of the work. But in terms of censorship, I think it's sort of I think it describes the bounds. I think it's part of our system to be censored, as some people nowadays it is important to respect people's feelings about certain mm-hmm. things in some ways, because you don't want to be harmful with your language.
Yeah.
And I feel like it sort of gives you the bounds with which that you're able to play.
Describes the bounds is a very
yeah,
nice
so,
phrase.
So, right? I mean, like, you wouldn't, there's a sort of idea that comedians have where it's like, you know, you shouldn't make certain jokes sort of unless you're able to pull them off, right? So you
mm-hmm.
shouldn't make a joke about, you know, let's say,
all the sensitive subjects.
All the sensitive subjects.
We know the whole. We know what they are. Yeah,
like sensitive subjects. Unless you're able to pull them off, and I mean that's of course very subjective. And there's sort of, I feel like there's some sort of truth to that, and also it's a double-edged sword. It's like a double-edged sword, and I maybe I don't even know where I stand on that. And that's kind
because
of
because art is a lot about, you know, because I think so much of our understanding of art, and I'm sort of thinking broadly, mm-hmm. music, theater, visual arts, all of it, is not the same thing as what happens when we understand a sentence when it's written down.
Mm-hmm.
So when we understand art as kind of embodied, mm-hmm. you know, people often say, right, it's embodied kind of absorption.
And it gives you, it makes you feel things that are,
right.
I mean, they say when you, in a musical, when you can't say it, you sing it. That's like the idea.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, there's something else.
There's
another element. There's sort of this, another piece that you need another medium to describe.
Yeah, so I think that's right.
The written word, the spoken word is sort of...
is not enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's right. And so I think that art sort of brings us to belief systems
mm-hmm.
in ways that just simple words can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we can sort of absorb a point of view. And part of that is like the empathy. But I think theater is particularly good at that, right? So creating this bodily empathy
mm-hmm.
between people. You know, and sort of then the actor kind of takes the audience into this whole belief system, which is so, I think opera is really good at that, right?
Yeah,
you know?
That's a good example, especially with the idea of the motifs that are brought through in opera.
Yeah.
But can I ask about what you mean by sort of a belief system? Like what exactly would be an example of
Just think of a common play, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Hamlet comes to
sure.
mind, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that what we end up kind of believing there
mm-hmm.
is the complicity of the mother,
mm.
right? She turned a blind eye and looked the other way. And so the idea of like moral guilt, you know, and what makes you guilty in a certain situation is then explained. But it's not explained like I just explained
it,
right? But it's
it's sort of intuitive. Yeah, exactly.
Intuitive is a good word, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that art kind of brings people into belief systems in ways that other things can't. And so it's so important not to censor art.
And
right?
Yeah, and it gives perspective that you would
perspective.
I think it's belief system, and it's more about showing you another way to look at something because it is because
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't think about it, but a theater, like a piece of theater, is framed. Like there is
a
frame of
absolutely.
The stage, and you see like the proscenium, and
there
is it does lie in a frame, and people now push the bounds of that. They might do theater in the round, or, well, they have been doing it for so long, but you might see different pieces.
But it's the same thing still, really.
Yeah, it's the same thing, and also just like the way they bring you into the art is really interesting. So but
it brings you into the art.
Censorship. I'm not sure that I really know where the bounds are in terms of theater, because I'm not sure that I have experienced censorship necessarily. Maybe it's much more free nowadays, or maybe I'm in a position where I'm in a place that no longer has such strict bounds, because I feel like I've read stories of people who maybe are, you know, a person of color who hasn't been able to tell their story,
mm-hmm.
and maybe nowadays is being able to have some sort of more of a platform. And
so there's the legal and there's the social, right? So the legal censorship
mm-hmm.
is sort of different than the social censorship, right? So I think you're talking about...
censorship is sort of both,
right? But I think you're now talking in the social realm, like
mm-hmm.
who gets allowed to talk, right?
Usually people with money.
Usually people, I was going to say people with power.
With money.
But actually people with money, right?
People with money,
yeah. I think that's right, right?
Yeah.
So who gets to talk is that. But
and what kind of... in my English class, we're talking about we watched this lovely TED Talk about the dangers of a single story and how you might develop these, you know, preconceptions about people you see based on only having heard one perspective. And
mm-hmm.
obviously, you know, people are much more... there's much more depth to it than that. So it's sort of the same thing of you know, if your stories only come from one place, you're not going to...
think broadly.
Yeah, think broadly, and censorship plays right into that. If different people are censored,
100%.
So you know, and maybe censorship can also nowadays might be what you're willing to listen to. You know,
people have edited that down.
Yeah, because it's like ideas that you'll allow yourself to take in. Because some people, there are people now who dispute facts, and that's part of sort of the dialogue online of what are the validity of certain facts, or what is, you know, this person's perspective sort of is invalid, and so I don't listen to their ideas. And so I feel like that's a form of censorship nowadays, where it's like we have so much data to intake where we have to sort of do our own form of censorship.
Yeah, I think that was sort of part of the project in this specific mm-hmm. location here in the library. That's why there's a quote over there from John Stuart Mill about always listen to the other side, right? Because there's so much that you can always learn by listening to the other side. Even if you disagree with them, mm-hmm. you'll learn the contents of your own thoughts just by disagreeing. And that's super valuable.
Exactly.
Right?
And you might even learn
that you're wrong.
either that you're wrong, or you might see where they've gone wrong, and you might learn a little bit more about your perspective in that way. So
I think that's right. Yeah, and I think that's what's happened. I think you're right that, you know, there's so much data, and so people have edited that out. But I think there's probably also another point to it, and I'm not really, there's another motive there, and I'm not really sure what it is. You know, there's another reason that people just go, no, I don't want to hear it.
And there's many things. There's like it could be too overwhelming. Like there's so much data, so it's overwhelming, or they've had enough of that.
Yeah, I thought there was a psychiatric reason, but I couldn't kind of put my finger on. I think that's it.
Yeah, it's some sort of that. Like there are a lot of atrocities happening, and maybe people are being inundated with that, and they don't want to recognize that perspective. They sort of have the privilege not to, if they're not sort of living through the things that are happening, or, you know, so they might not want to see those things. So there's this form of censorship there. I feel like the algorithm of TikTok, like your specific algorithm, is really interesting. I don't really use it, but like it develops its own bounds based on what you're willing to give your time to.
Sure.
And so
it gives you back what you want.
Exactly. Or what will keep you most.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that is people have, you know, very varying algorithms, and some people, you could say that they've censored things that aren't in their algorithm. They've cast them out just through this virtue of, there's a playwright right there. Her name's Nurit. She wrote a lovely play. She's walked by. They've censored their.
Yeah, that's kind of the motive that I started this project many years ago, because I think that a lot of artists and a lot of philosophers, the same thing. They think that their point of view is very much their own point of view. And it struck me a long time ago that as both artists and as philosophers, our points of view are really an amalgamation of other things that we've heard and done, right?
Yeah.
So that
Shakespeare already wrote it, right?
Yeah, right. We're just kind of repeating it in many ways, right? And so, and then I thought, and also conversation and the consensus that we come to when we listen to each other is the interesting thing that happens in society. And so you were talking about people don't establish facts very easily anymore. And I think there's a couple reasons, right? I think that people have lost a sense of that larger amalgamation of opinions and how that forms. I think it's also that people don't properly respect authority in a way that they used to. There's no such thing as an expert. Like, people don't believe scientists know anything more than they know, right? If they have a high school education, they're sure that they can figure out about climate warming better than the scientists. And so there's a sort of a disjunct there about recognizing what it takes to actually have a lot of knowledge, right? So I think it's both things, but there's something wonderful about, like, just going around asking people, so what do you think about this? And getting a whole collating process of getting people's opinions about what censorship is.
And going back to theater, you just made me think of this. It is a dialogue between the audience and the.
See, I think so.
Because there's a shared breath in the space. There's laughs. There's silences, and it does bring you into the dialogue whether you have lines or not. So
super
you are,
much.
Yeah. So
during COVID, we set up a tent, right? And an actor actually mm-hmm. came into the tent one time uh-huh. and he talked wonderfully well uh-huh. about how depressing it was for him
not to
be able to like and
share,
right, but then he had realized what a theater does mm-hmm. and he had realized the communicative back and forth reciprocal relationship mm-hmm. and he was still sort of unable to kind of figure out, and he kind of went, I don't know what it is. He's talked about laughter, he goes, but it's also maybe it's like smells, and he was like mm. there's something about, you know, those other bodies are out there and you're all doing it together.
Yeah, and it's sort of a commitment to an experience as well. That's part of it, like yeah. everybody sort of buys a ticket and that sort of shared experience, like that's sort of tertiary in a way, but it also it does, it's part of the experience. There is an experience, like going to the movie theater is different than watching a movie at home, so there's like there's that distinction that you have to make as well, like watching something on your phone is different than seeing something happen live in person. So it's the medium with which you like consume that media does totally make a difference.
The presence of the other bodies, right? Like to me, those are like gradations. You know, when you're alone and you're watching the movie, there's something very solipsistic about that. You know, it's just like your own little world, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Then you go to the movie theater, it's less solipsistic, but not like it is at a theater.
Right.
You know, where it's a play. Then you are totally invested in the process with the person next to you. Mm. You're all kind of doing it together. Right? Classrooms, the best classrooms work like that. Like, I know sort of the art of that. It takes a while to get a classroom to work as a unit, you know, where now they're working as one, not as individuals, but as one. And a good theater experience is where everybody's doing it as one, you know? Very hard to put into words. You know what I'm talking about.
No, I totally do understand it. Yeah, you're working.
I can see by your eyes.
And what was interesting was, in my head, a good classroom would be one that makes all these different ideas, like all these different thinkers, which is kind of different from what you said, but it kind of is the same in that you have all these different thinkers coming together. So
yes,
there's another element to it. So I like that.
And you have
idea.
To build that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And you build it through sort of building trust between the individuals.
And there's a, and also the distance. So like looking at a screen, there's a level of separation between you and what you're looking at. So you're
huge.
Not really, you're not really there. And of course, being in the theater, you would be there.
Yeah. There is something like the lawyers were talking about on Friday. I thought it was really interesting that, you know, our speech, our respect for speech is a consequence of our evolution.
Mm.
And that's completely dependent on us interacting with each other in person and bodily.
Mm.
You know, like we can't translate that into technology. There's something
I think it's completely different.
Completely different.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, because I feel like there's an immediacy that's there in person, of course. Like when you're speaking to somebody, there's, you know,
it's
you
hard
have
to point to all the things.
You have to come up with it right there. And it's not easy to communicate, to communicate ideas. Like these things are all over the place, jumbled in your head, and you're trying to try to find either common ground or maybe not. Maybe you're trying to explain some complex ideas. So
it's very hard.
Yeah. And there's this analogy, I forgot where it's from. But if you're talking to somebody and they treat an opinion or an idea as if it were a switch that were on or off,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't willing to flip it the other way while you're talking to them, you're not going to, you know, forward the conversation in any way. And I sort of feel like that's sort of an interesting dialogue. So it's like if you enter dialogue with somebody who doesn't believe in climate change at all, and they're not willing to take in any of your information, you're just going to be talking at each other and not to each other. So
yeah.
I feel like that's part of the idea of becoming one. I like this idea of becoming one.
Yeah.
And I feel like sharing an experience in a piece of theater is sort of that same idea. So maybe it's this coming together to share a perspective. It's this idea of sharing.
Yeah, see, I think that the reason that it's easier to do it in theater than in that kind of mm-hmm. debate format is because of what you said before, that you're giving the people a framework.
Mm-hmm.
I think of it as like an attitude toward the content. So you're giving people a way into the content,
sort of a lens,
through the attitude that the characters and the scenery and the music and the lighting and all of that presents a particular attitude toward the event, mm-hmm. right? And so then you have a way of framing the event, and it allows you psychologically to absorb certain facts, if you will, mm-hmm. in ways that you couldn't if the facts were just given linguistically. Mm-hmm. You know, so theater has this way, and I think art does in general, has a way of giving one an attitude to the world that mm-hmm. then allows you to access the world in ways you couldn't otherwise. Mm-hmm. You know? And I think it's so, we can't bring one another to belief a lot of times mm-hmm. if we just throw words back and forth to each other.
There's a limit. Yeah,
there's
of course.
A limit.
There's a limit, and also, I feel like people would be more willing to see another perspective through another medium. Like, some people are different mm-hmm. learners, so it would make sense that if they're, like, you know, some people are visual learners, some people are better at learning via writing, so maybe a piece of writing would play better for somebody than a piece of art, or the other way around.
That
so
is true too.
It would make sense that I feel like what maybe an element we were missing is, like, part of having a dialogue with somebody else is sort of you're putting yourself on the line. Like, there's an element of, in terms of, like, if you're arguing about some sort of, having some sort of factual debate, mm-hmm. it's sort of, you're putting yourself on the line in some sort of way. Whereas
if your pride is involved.
Yeah, your pride is involved, uh-huh. and also just, like, your, how well you research the subject, maybe something like that.
Yeah,
but just, like, you yourself are at stake. Like, your something is at stake
also,
for you.
So there's a defensiveness
involved. Whereas if you're seeing a piece of theater that might affect you in the same sort of way on the same subject, you're just seeing it. You're seeing it happen versus you're in it. So I feel like
That's a really interesting thing. So I'm going to give this back to you. You tell me if this is what you're saying. That's a very interesting point. So almost you're anonymous in some ways when you... But not really. That's maybe the wrong way to go. Mm-hmm. But you're outside the...
You're a viewer, is what I'd say. You're just a viewer. You're sort of...
And yet you're super involved.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a contradictory thing. So, but you don't have to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what it is, right? Your beliefs can fluctuate, mm-hmm. and you can start to believe or refuse to believe, or that whole credence level of beliefs can fluctuate without you ever having to defend yourself.
I feel like you're part of the space. That's what it is. You're part of the space.
I think we're getting the same hand gestures where there's like an accordion.
It creates a space that you're able to sit in without being sort of actively questioned. Like not yourself.
Yeah.
You yourself aren't questioned. Like
you have nothing to defend.
Yeah, exactly. There's no defense there. So.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And so you might be able to absorb contradictory to your position, right? Contradictory points of view mm-hmm. in ways that you wouldn't be able to absorb them when you had to defend your point of view.
Yeah.
It's super interesting. I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
I think you're right about that. I think that's why belief becomes more possible in artworks.
Yeah, that's I also feel like that's why people sort of going back to, like, information on your phone, that's why it's easy for people to, I feel like that's where anonymous comes in. It's like that's where people can let these unfiltered
yeah, that was the wrong word.
Just sort of feeling like based
crap
dialogue. Yeah, crap or whatever. Crap, they can let crap fly but maybe there is a space in sort of an anonymous world where you're able to be unquestioned in your thought sort of and will be able to challenge your own beliefs in some sort of way that isn't possible maybe seeing something or being in person with somebody, because you're allowing yourself to be seen in a way that you wouldn't, because it's not you, it's whatever this
is.
So I don't know.
Like, you went to a masked ball, right?
Yeah,
you
sort
pretended
of like
to
that.
Be somebody, and then you got into political debates about people and they didn't know who you were.
Exactly, yeah. It's sort of like that. And I don't know. But yeah, I do feel like there is something there to being in some sort of shared space, and the ability to question your own thought in a way that isn't an attack on yourself.
That's really well said. I think you figured out something really important. I appreciate it very much.
Of course.